This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Too little joy in your life? Turn up the volume. 94.9.
The Conch, a Joy forum for community discussion. Call now on 1300 Joy 949.
John, $10 for an alcoholic drink.
Everything was packaged in cans. The cans are actually 1.5 to 2 standard drinks.
You think that's taking it a little bit too far?
Just because you're a woman should not give you that space.
India, are you sure?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. All right, hit me with it.
It all depends what you're talking about, Paul.
You're with the Conch. Have your say. Call now on 1300 Joy 949.
Paul Anthony with you on the Conch, a community forum. We take your calls live to air every Monday, 9 through to 12. Your panel today consisting of Greg, Ted and Zoe. Talking about a whole heap of things now. We weren't talking about violence, a new report out telling us that child crime, that's the kids that are actually doing the crime, is up. Boys aged between 15 to 19 are now the state's largest offender group, with 11,668 of the 180,000 people in the state accused of 34,000 crimes between 2008 and 2009. That's just a little scary, don't you think?
And the last budget, we were looking at building 3 facilities. So that seemed to be the answer that was coming through from government.
But of all those 11,000 crimes, I'm sure the people doing the crimes would hate it if someone did it back to them. So there's a little bit about respect lacking here, isn't there, in the discussion with young people in crime?
And a lack of empathy too. I mean, that's the thing that scares me the most, is the lack of empathy. You know, people who come from torture and trauma backgrounds, not having the empathy out of a survival technique and the ability to pick up a machete because you believe that your life might be under threat at any particular time also means that if you find yourself in a difficult situation, you're willing to go that extra mile, which may not actually be required.
It's like a constant siege mentality.
Yeah.
You're constantly under attack no matter what, and you feel threatened all the time.
And Greg, you make a good point about when it happens to them. I think that's the whole thing about creating awareness as well. Until it happens to yourself or somebody you know, you probably don't really see it as a problem.
Yeah.
But we should also say that, like, victims of sexual assault are in no way, there's no evidence that just because you've been a victim of sexual assault, you're likely to become a perpetrator against someone else.
No.
So what you're talking about, Ted, when you're talking about people conditioned to responding to violence in a particular way they've experienced, that doesn't extend right across the field to all types of violence.
No, but, yeah, that aspect of that lack of empathy, you know, of being able to go and hit someone and actually feel that that's an okay thing to do.
One family who knows probably more than anyone, out of Thornlands in Brisbane, their son Matthew Stanley, was at a party in 2006 and was king hit, put onto life support and is no longer with us. Not only has it, you know, this senseless act has robbed the family of their son, but it's also been the catalyst for this, the establishment of the Matthew Stanley Foundation, which aims to raise awareness of youth violence and prevent similar tragedies. So we have on the phone the father of Matthew Stanley. Paul Stanley, welcome to Joy.
Thank you. Hi, how is it, everybody?
Great, Paul. What's the weather like up there?
Wonderful. In Queensland, it's gorgeous one day and even better the next.
Yes. You're true to the cause.
Tourism Australia would give you a few pennies for that, I'm sure.
Yes, it would. Firstly, Paul, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Pleasure.
Take us back to that one day in September 2006.
Yeah, that's a day that'll never go from my mind, that's for real. It was actually our youngest son's 12th birthday, and we went out to have dinner to celebrate the next birthday, and Matty had been invited to this party about 3 months before, and it was two friends of his were having a joint party to celebrate their 18th birthday, and, you know, everything was right. He was going with friends, everybody knew each other, and then we had dinner for next birthday, and dropped Matty off at the party, and about 2 hours later, and we got a phone call from one of Matt's friends that saying that Matt had been attacked and he was badly injured, and he was, you know, we'd had better get there, you know, straight away. So we, the three of us, jumped into the car and drove around to the street in Alexandra Hills and drove around the corner, and there was cop cars everywhere and heaps of young people, and lying in the middle of the roadway, you know, a couple of cars were shining their lights on them, was Matty, and he had blood coming out of his nose and his mouth and his ears and everything, and he was just laying there making this horrible, horrible noise, and eventually an ambulance turned up and they
took them away to a hospital, and the Princess Alexandra Hospital, and after, I don't know how long, 2-3 hours, whatever it was, two of the doctors came down and took us into a side room and showed us the scans that had been done of Matthew, and they said that Matthew had horrendous brain injuries, they were irreversible, and he's going to die.
Oh, how awful.
Yeah, wow, so that the truth.
And so quick, such
yeah,
a...
Well, yeah, he actually died at about 4 o'clock the following afternoon.
Oh, wow.
What had happened was that because, you know, I mean, Matt was just one of these kids. He was a good kid. He, I mean, I suppose he had sometimes might have had a beer, but he didn't smoke and all those sort of things, didn't take drugs. And the party just became a bit of an 18th birthday party where a lot of alcohol started getting consumed, and, you know, boys being boys started getting a bit pushy and shovey, and Matt and a couple of his mates said, you know, let's go.
Yeah.
And as he was walking out the door, this very large individual confronted them, and Matthew and this other individual were two separate ends of the, you know, the spectrum. Matthew was an alpha kid, and this other piece of scum was right at the bottom of the pile, and he confronted Matthew, and while Matthew was just saying, and the last words he ever uttered, according to witnesses, were, "I'm just going," and that's when the guy hit him and knocked him to the ground and kicked him a number of times, and then he dropped onto his chest, and Matty ended up with two fractures to his skull and four broken ribs and a crushed lung.
Wow.
And that was just because he went to a party to enjoy himself.
Were there any parents at that party at all?
Yeah, there were. There was a number of parents there around. I mean, they were sitting away from the party because it was a teenage party, and, you know, A, the parents didn't really want to be too heavily involved in it, and B, the kids didn't want them there. And, I mean, I guess it was pretty typical of a young person's party.
Sure.
And I mean, the parents themselves, they all thought they were doing the right thing by supervising, in inverted commas, and the supervision consisted of sitting, having a few drinks and talking amongst themselves.
Paul, is there a huge sense of guilt around feeling that you should have been there as a parent? I mean, when you lose your son, do you start to go through, well, could I have changed things had I been there? Is that a question that comes up along the way?
Well, it's a pretty obvious question. I mean, I know Kay and I sat down, and, you know, and it came up within a couple of days. You know, I wish that we hadn't let Matthew go to the party. But, I mean, hindsight's a great thing. And, you know, we'd be all multimillionaires if we had hindsight. But, I mean, had we said to Matthew, "No, you can't go to the party," all we would have had was a 15-and-a-half-year-old kid with a lot of angst to us because we didn't let him go to the party.
Yeah.
And there wouldn't have been a big sign in the sky next morning saying, "Congratulations, if you let Matthew go to the party, he was going to be murdered."
Well, similarly, the male or the person that hit your son and caused his death, if his parents had said, "Perhaps you should stay home tonight because you're out of control," or "Perhaps you've had too much to drink and you shouldn't go out," there'd been a little bit of parental control the other end, maybe the event wouldn't have happened.
Oh, well, that's right. But, I mean, his background evidently was that he was living with one parent over in New Zealand, and I think it was the mother over there. She couldn't handle him because he was just a violent person.
Mm.
He came over to live in Sydney with his father, and he had an AVO, applied violence order taken out against him, so they sent him up to Queensland here to live with his uncle, thinking that the uncle would be able to sort of control him a little bit, because, you know, all parents have got problems with their 16-year-old kids. But this individual, he went to the party. He admitted that he took along a dozen cans of, I think, seem to remember it was bourbon and coke, and he reckoned that he drank them all before hitting Matthew.
Yeah.
I mean, he was 16 years old.
So in your direct experience in this, and you've been involved in the foundation, I mean, which is fantastic, congratulations for taking what's a very bleak situation and trying to turn it into prevention for other people.
Thank you.
I really admire you in doing that. What, in hindsight, could have been done differently, or is something that you're looking at helping other people to not be in this situation again?
Well, I mean, obviously we all hope for miracles, but, I mean, I guess one of the biggest problems that there is out in this wide world that we live in now is that we've lost the ability to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, young people turn in and say, "I want to have a party. I want to have a party, and I want to have alcohol there." And they just keep on and on and on at parents until
finally, mum and dad end up by saying, oh, all right then, just to shut them up. And we really should be just turning around and making the rules, setting the rules, setting the guidelines and saying, look, these are what the rules are and we're not changing them. And what we're trying to do as a foundation is get to the kids a lot younger than, I mean, there's no point in going to them in their last year of school and trying to change what their attitude's going to be. Mm-hmm. So what we're starting to do is work more with the kids, what we call, you know, year six and year seven, and try and change the culture that they're going through, that it is not obligatory to go to a party and get smashed off your skull and then start belting somebody.
But you're using some innovative ways to do that too, I think, Paul, aren't you? I hear you've developed some campaign that uses the language that kids use and speak to try and make inroads into making that connection with kids growing up.
Well, yeah, look, we're just about to launch a campaign up here, which is called Walk Away, Chill Out. And the basis of that is to try and give the kids some ownership on, if you are in a situation or you can see a situation developing that is not looking good, that it's cool to be able to turn around and just walk away, that it's not cool to be the best or the toughest fighter in the school. And it's cool to be able to say, look, I'm really sorry. You know, I didn't mean to. I didn't understand that this was annoying you. To try and change a culture. And this is why we've got young people actually putting a lot of input into, this is our campaign. The other one that we have young people involved with too, and this is a state government thing, which is called, is One Punch Can Kill. And that actually started 2.5 years ago. And while it was reasonably successful, it had a whole lot of old people trying to tell young people what's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And they don't listen.
So well, has that changed?
I never did when I was a teenager.
Oh, of course not. So has that changed now? Are there young ambassadors or advocates who are running that program?
Well, it would be a little bit early to say it's been running, because I'm actually, after I finish this talk here, I'm going to another meeting.
Of course you are.
The whole thing is being put, and it's about One Punch Can Kill.
Yeah.
We've just put out the offer to young people to become part of it and to try, you know, there's a huge number of very, very talented young people out there who have got great ideas and are just sick and tired of the violence that's going on, and they want to be able to get their message out there. And what the Queensland Police Service and the government and ourselves have done is we're giving them the opportunity to come up with something that may work with the young people.
Yeah, well, keep us in mind when you're looking for those advocates, because I know that there are some great GLBTI advocates out there who also are pretty sick of that sort of violence and would be happy to put their hands up.
If they want to go onto the One Punch Can Kill website over the next couple of weeks, you know, there'll be more and more information coming up on it, how they can actually be involved with the thing. And we just welcome it. I mean, originally we were hoping it was going to be from Queensland, but I mean, already we've got interest from New South Wales. There was one guy from West Australia contacted us.
No, that's great.
What can we do? And, I mean, it's not just a problem in Melbourne. It's not just a problem in Brisbane. Here.
No.
It's not a problem. It's a problem everywhere. And if we don't do something about it, there won't be any young people left.
Paul, it's Ted here. Look, thanks very much for your time today. It's an issue born out of much sorrow, but I think the work you're doing is going to help a lot of other people.
I certainly hope so.
The best educators of us on this, I think, are the young people. Is there a direct link between the alcohol and the amount of alcohol and then the violence, or is violence pervasive independent of alcohol? Have you got any insights on that dynamic?
I think I'd have to change my name to Professor on that.
Should have put you on the spot.
I talk a lot with young people now and try and listen to what they have to say. The young people are saying that the amount of alcohol that other people are drinking is just crazy. And their reactions now, and this is something I discussed with some young people a while ago, and what seems to happen is the kids play a lot of computer games now. Now, it's not necessarily the violence that's on the game, but the fact is that the young people have got to react so quickly on a computer game. You don't have the opportunity to sit around. I heard earlier on you were talking about sitting around the dining room table and talking. Young people don't have the opportunity now to be able to turn around and talk to somebody else. They have got to react really quickly, and they've learnt that from these computer games. A split second, if you don't react now, the whole situation has changed and you're going to be the victim. So these kids are reacting very quickly, and, I mean, alcohol is going to change their thought processes anyway. But It's a combination of them both, and also the combination of now young people are drinking earlier than what they were when this grey-headed old one was growing up, and now, they're drinking different alcohol.
Now, Paul, it's not just the victim of violence, it's not just the perpetrator. The issue, I think, has to extend to the circle of people that watch something develop and evolve and take place and say nothing or do nothing to call the police or pull a person away and walk them out to cool off somewhere else. It's the spectators, if you like, that have to be brought into these campaigns.
I 150% agree with you on that. I mean, you've only got to look on YouTube and see the amount of... Just go on there and put down school fights. And yeah. I mean, any time somebody shouts at somebody else, everybody gets their camera out and starts filming it. And this is what we're trying to do with the Walk Away Chill Out, the whole thing, is make it that it's not cool to be involved in fighting. And standing, watching and doing nothing is being involved with it. If four people walked in between two young people or people who were starting to get aggro, said, come on, everybody, like, hey, let's be cool, a situation could change very, very quickly. And instead of standing around cheering these two people on who are going to beat the living daylights out of each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there's anything for the censorship, maybe that's the first thing we need to be pulling down, is actually glorifying and those things on YouTube not being pulled down immediately.
I agree.
Paul, if there is a young person who is listening at the moment, firstly, what ages are you looking at for ambassadors, and what's the best way for them to get involved in your program?
Well, number one, we've sort of now made a decision within the foundation that once people get to the age of 18 and can legally go out and drink, we sort of are losing touch with them. And so we're aiming at the kids under 18, but when I say that, there are many, many young people out there who, young people of 30 and less than that, there is no age group on anybody who wants to be an ambassador to try and stop the carnage that is out there, because it affects everybody. It's affecting you guys because you're talking to me. I mean,
absolutely.
So there is definitely no age limit on people wanting to get in touch and work with it, and they're more than welcome to. They can either go onto the Matthew Stanley Foundation website, which is just matthewstanleyfoundation.com.au, or onto the One Punch Can Kill. Just Google that, and it'll come up on the Queensland Police Service website.
Great.
And please do. Please do.
We can also go onto Facebook. I've just logged on then, Paul, and clicked and liked your foundation and became a friend of your foundation. I think people should do that as well.
That'd be wonderful. How do you do that?
You just go onto your website, onto matthewstanleyfoundation.com.au, and there's a place where you can actually acknowledge that you're part of the people doing the journey with you.
That is wonderful. Fantastic. I mean, I do know it's on there, but I just, you know, the colour of my hair doesn't let me get onto it.
Become a friend.
Paul, before we let you go, I just wanted to touch on, while doing some research on you and your family and having a box of tissues beside me, I come across a documentary that Kieran Ricketts put together, which I believe's called Borderline.
Yeah.
Could you just tell us a little bit about that DVD?
Right, well, basically what happened was that a couple of years ago, Kieran, he lives down on the border region of Queensland and New South Wales, and he was walking home one night and these punks attacked him and then beat him up quite severely, and he ended up by getting to the police station, but the police station wasn't manned. The cops were all out doing the roundabout, and because Kieran was at university doing film and television, he just realised that there was a really good story, if that's what can be said, a good story in what had happened to him, and he started going out interviewing people and that. And I mean, there's a thing there where there's a couple of two or three young guys who are talking about, oh yeah, it's really cool to go out and smash people, it feels great. I thought they were actors, but they weren't. They were actually young perpetrators of some of these forms of violence that's going on, and they were proud of it. And, you know, and that's just crazy. Anyway, Kieran put the thing together, and it's just well worth looking at, and very, very scary. And incidentally, too, I've got to tell you, the Matthew Stanley Foundation has just done a documentary as well. It's called One Punch Did Kill, and it's being filmed on Channel 9 up here in southeast Queensland on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock.
One of the things that Kieran mentions in the DVD is that it took a year or so to even charge or bring the perpetrators to task. Do you think that's one of the issues we have as well? People aren't held responsible straight away for their actions?
Of course. 100% right on that. Look, you know, I think the responsibility for your actions has gone out the door. I mean, you know, Matthew's murderer got 2.5 years imprisonment.
Mm. Will that change the behaviour, putting someone in a small box, is the question, isn't it?
Well, why should other people have to be scared of walking down the street with a scumbag like that is back out on the street again? And, I mean, I'm not saying that rehabilitation is not the way to go. I mean, some people can get rehabilitated. But, you know, my son has got eternity.
Yeah.
This piece of filth, he got 2.5 years, came over here to this country, he murdered my son, and he has now gone back to New Zealand to live.
And that's a good discussion point for strengthening sentencing, making it more difficult for people with criminal behaviour from overseas to actually come to the country. And if they do manage to come to the country, it's about some sort of way of watching people's behaviour so they are a true citizen rather than be a person that underneath commits violent crime.
Yeah, well, look, you know, 100% right. The crazy part about it is, too, that we have spoken to the Immigration Department and they said he will probably be able to come back into this country if he wants to, because he committed the crime over here, he served his time over here. Had he committed the crime in New Zealand, he wouldn't have been allowed in. So in 6 months' time, my son Nicholas, surviving son Nicholas, could be walking down the street, walk around the corner and come face to face with this individual who murdered his brother.
Well, and that's the concern, isn't it, is that one thing to arrest someone, but if you don't stop that person from being a tool for violence in the future, then what are we doing?
Paul, your DVD that you spoke of, Matthew...
I'll send a copy down to you. It's probably not a good thing for radio, but I mean...
the Foundation has discussed an educational DVD to go throughout schools. Is this what is going to be part of the DVD, and how can we get this DVD?
We're having the actual media launch of it. It's going to air on, say, on Saturday at 2 o'clock, and we're just looking. I mean, it's not something that we're going to be selling, but if people wanted to get it and make a donation to us, that would be pretty cool. You know, again, contact us on events at Matthew Stanley Foundation. We'll be able to an email, so, yeah.
Some websites for you to visit, matthewstanleyfoundation.com.au. There's also the One Punch Can Kill site, which is the competition, which starts May 21. And that's onepunchcankill.qld.gov.au.
That's the one.
Anything else from the panel before we let Paul go?
I'll just attribute to you, Paul. I think you're an inspiration to parents and potential parents, people out there that are thinking about being parents. You're a model, and this is how people should be modelling their care for kids, whether it's their own kids or their godchildren or their neighbours' kids, about the kids in general. So look, good on you, Paul. You're a tribute.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the good work you're doing, guys.
No worries. And all the best to your family as well there, Paul.
Thanks a million.
Paul Stanley there, father of Matthew Stanley, who was a king hit back in 2006. They set up a foundation in honour of Matthew and also to raise awareness and stop youth violence and similar tragedies. Those websites again, matthewstanleyfoundation.com.au and onepunchcankillqld.gov.au.
We're not so far removed from Paul's experience and certainly his son's experience here in the gay community. You had that keynote sports player bashed at Hungry Jack's on the corner of Chapel Street and Commercial Road. This is earlier this year. 2 weeks before that, you had gay guys bashed. 2 weeks after that, you had gay guys bashed. And no one called police when the gay men were bashed and assaulted in busy street peak entertainment time at night time in Chapel Street. No one calls people when gay men are bashed. So it's the same nature of violence affecting people in a slightly different way to the tragedy that unfolded for Matthew Stanley.
One of our announcers at Joy was bashed just a couple of weeks ago, 5:30, waiting to go to work, you know. And you think that's the one time in the morning as you're going to work, you don't expect for violence to come by you at that time. So fortunately, he's okay and well on the mend, which is good. But still, you know, how do we make sure our streets are safer?
Your thoughts on Joy 94.9, 1300 at Joy 949.
Wherever we live, work and play, safety affects all parts of our lives.
Community safety is everyone's responsibility, and there are things we can do to make our homes, workplaces, streets, neighbourhoods and communities safer.
Victoria Police GLOWS, Crime Stoppers, the Anti-Violence Project and Joy 94.9 working together to help make our community safe.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.